This is Mae Brussel. It's KAZU FM in Pacific Grove, California. This is broadcast number 636, and it's February the 13th, 1984. I've been doing a lot of reading on the mental programs, going back to the Tavistock Clinic. Finally, I've had material for years, and I got some from a friend back east and somebody up north, and I've been studying that in conjunction with the work. I have enough now for a book on Grenada. It was supposed to be a 5-part story for the Rebel. But now I have a choice. I can enlarge it and put in the stuff that wasn't included and try to get a book out, or I can cut it down and then maybe just send it in as a single article and reduce it, like I did the Korean Airlines story. But I've been doing a lot on mental hospital investigation again. I've done a lot already, but it's very important. And the mental, the manipulation of society by the psychologists and the sociologists because of the Dr. Jeffrey Byrne coming from that Yerkes Primate Center in Atlanta, Georgia, to be the vice chancellor with the students down in Grenada, and his son, Jeffrey Byrne, who worked for the Defense Department and the CIA and in Vietnam and mind control experiments and with the White House plumbers and Henry Kissinger and Egil Krogh before he went on to Jimmy Carter. Studying the Burns, I had to go more into mental institutions because there's a pattern here that I have to delve farther in, just like I got that breakthrough a few years ago into the Vatican connections. I've always known that the mind control, the control of society, is one of the most important factors of manipulating all of us into being the zombies we become. And I began studying books and articles on the way that Great Britain controlled their colonies and how their British psychologists worked with Hitler's psychologists and controlled masses with very few policemen visible. And then these people worked with the OSS and with British intelligence and then came to the United States into Harvard and Columbia and MIT and Pennsylvania and began their mind control experiments on society at large and on us, that's us, continuing the process of the British Empire of how you control large masses in the hands of a few. I have always said that the increase of the dope in this country is what Great Britain did to China with the pouring in the narcotics to keep them subdued, keep you busy, keep you sick, keep you earning the money to pay it and take your mind off of things. So that the mental health, the mental status is very important to what is happening now, particularly as more people seem to be phasing out of the living game and just into the accepting and the entertaining game, the home box office. It's like I can go home tonight and see Stravinsky's ballet, and I look at the TV guy, what is there of interest Thursday night? It's the Sidney Reilly, and all of a sudden, if you want to be a zombie, I limit it to 2 programs. If you want to be a zombie, start with 5 and you're hooked. There was a story about Ronald Reagan running again, and the New York Times mentioned that his mental health, his physical condition is fine, and that his mental health seems to be all right. They said no one who interviewed him said that he's not keen or alert, judging by his speeches, by the State of the Union message, and his public appearances or his sense of humor. Now, if I were doing a diagnosis, I would say that the 2 signs that the man is mentally sick are his sense of humor and his speech, the State of the Union message. Because if you would take just the articles that Mae Brussel, not computerized, just Mae Brussel cut, of domestic problems in the United States in terms of things affecting all our lives, whether it's poison in the foods or pollution or table legs coming in from Mexico with radiation and surgical problems and causing cancer by chemotherapy, medical abuse of people, the financial scandals, the mafia, the drug arrests, the massive drug arrests, the scandals in the courts and the various things that are going on now. You have to know that something is wrong out there. And in his great speech to the nation on his State of the Union, he said that the country is stronger and more secure than ever before. He goes on the philosophy that if we have the more guns and the more bases, then we're the more secure. That isn't true. It wasn't true in Iran, where you had a handful of native population and the Shah had every technique in every radio device and spying device necessary to keep the native population under control. Societies change, and when they've had enough, there's going to be an upheaval, just as they got rid of the military dictatorship in Greece that wants to come back, of the military dictatorship in Argentina. He says, never before we've been more secure. And he said, America's out of its worst crisis in post-war history, and we've met the rising problem of failing confidence in the 1970s. If you listen to Phil Donahue and the teenagers, over a million that are pregnant, and the incidence of abortions, the millions of people aborted, and the people in jails and adding new jails, more jails, and the squads, the police squads. This is not a country of peaceful or happy people. It's a country of people who are so pacified, like babies with pacifiers in their mouth and everything to please them. But when the thing comes out, and if it falls out and there's no parent home, they're going to scream as much or harder than ever. And there's nothing upstairs in that man's head. And he's really sick. Now, there's one interesting article in the San Francisco Chronicle that many of you in the East and elsewhere don't get that is very pertinent to a lot of today's problems. It was written by Warren Hinkle, Hinkle's Journal, Where Are Harvey Milk's Clothes? This has to do with the murder of the supervisor in San Francisco, Harvey Milk, and Mayor George Moscone in San Francisco, both killed the same day by Dan White. Now, there's a play that opened up in the Bay Area, and a listener, subscriber to World Watchers, is acting in that play. And he called me. Originally, he wanted Steve Dobbins, who wrote the play, to come down and see me, but they never did. And they ordered my tapes on Jonestown and Dan White and the Dan White murder. And the play Steve Dobbins wrote is called The Dan White Incident. It didn't do well in San Francisco, but it opened in L.A., and it's doing very well there, partly because it was just the time Dan White had moved to L.A., but the interest is down there. Maybe it's too close to home, to San Francisco, but they should have seen it. And I was asking Jim, you know, how was the play going? And he said it was fine, except that there was one part that the night they opened, they got an injunction from the coroner that they couldn't have the play. And I might have mentioned it on the program to you before in the past, how there was a mutilation of the genitals of Moscone and Milk. Harvey Milk was a homosexual. But if there was a mutilation of the genitals, if I was told, or this is what he said, and I think I shared it with you before, that Moscone was forced to hand on hands and knees, remember that broadcast? Some of you heard it, some of your new listeners, walk like a dog and shot up the ass. Well, this is what he was told, that there was this stomping on the genitals of Harvey Milk and shooting the mayor, making him do this, identical to what the Nazis do in Argentina that Mr. Timmerman had referred to. Okay, now when the play opened, it brought up the controversy, and they had to take it out of the play in San Francisco, but they included it in Los Angeles. But now the question came up because of the play, where are the clothing that were worn by Harvey Milk and Mayor Moscone? And this article says that coroner Boyd G. Stevens, Stephens, says he will not tell anybody, even the police, where the clothes are. Now, the implications of this are tremendous, because before I go into that story, let me remind you that there were accusations that a second gun was shot in the Ambassador Hotel. The man was identified as Thane Caesar. He has even made a movie and a record talking about the gun going off and how he hated the Kennedys, and racial slurs that the Kennedys were giving the country to them. Now, Thane Caesar was behind Robert Kennedy, and after Robert Kennedy died, the coroner's office, or somebody, took the sleeve of Robert Kennedy's coat and the shirt sleeve and the ceiling panel, so that if the trajectory were a shot from the back straight up to the ceiling, it would show a second gun, because Sirhan was in front of Robert Kennedy. Not only did they get rid of the gun, but the sleeve was cut off, and it's never been an issue yet. Warren Hinkle should go down to L.A. It's been written up in the literature on the Robert Kennedy assassination, but never become a major issue. So, and then to get to the John Kennedy assassination, and I did a story, as a matter of fact, I wrote up a long time ago, I was going to give it to Rebel, on the clothing of John Connolly, that when the Warren Commission had the FBI and the doctors testifying about the bullet directions of John Connolly, because he said they were different bullets than killed John Kennedy, and that would mean an extra gunman because of the time sequence, Oswald couldn't have gotten over that many shots. And the doctors doing the surgery claimed and intimated that there was a different kind of an entry from outside into the sleeve of John Connolly and into the trousers than the one same bullet that our senator from Pennsylvania, Arlen Specter, says went from behind John Kennedy into the sleeve and into the thigh and out on the stretcher. So the doctors, in frustration for the Warren Commission, said, where are the clothes, the coat, the shirt, and the pants of John Connolly to check the trajectory? And the FBI said they were destroyed by dry clinging. And then I began a long pursuit through all the evidence to went to the congressman, Henry Gonzalez's apartment in Washington, D.C., where it was sent out to a dry cleaner. I believe it was Gonzalez. I better take that back till I check it out. It was either Yarborough or Gonzalez. I haven't read that or looked at that for about 5 or 6 years, but it would have proven a second gunman in that case. And it was important to the John Kennedy case that that clothing be destroyed. And it was important to the Robert Kennedy case that the clothing be destroyed, because it'd be a conspiracy in both places. But now we get to the question of the clothing here, because if there was sexual mutilation of both people, then Dan White would be tried on a different charge, and he would not get off. And there is a different kind of a charge for doing that, and he would go back to jail and maybe never get out. So the question of the clothing came out, and then Mayor Dianne Feinstein, who is a perfect patsy, who took over George Moscone's job, intervened with the coroner, with Stevens, and said that she declined to say where the clothing was. Now, the coroner's action has set off a problem. The attorney for Harvey Milk's estate, John Wall, W-A-H-L, said that this is appalling and bizarre. I called Wall. Again, it's a case of my getting into something and people don't understand what I'm talking about. I talked to him as soon as I heard this and told him about the similarities and he should get the clothing. But that was almost a year ago or a half a year ago, and now they're concerned. And the roommate of Harvey Milk, Joseph Scott Smith, wants the clothing. And the coroner has said, I will destroy them. The coroner threatened to shut down the play, and he said, Mr. Stevens is a public employee paid by the city of San Francisco, and he said that my position would be that the clothes would never be returned. I want assurance that the clothes wouldn't end up in a sideshow to become like Billy the Kid's pistol. I personally would not want to see a mannequin dressed, and he said that he would like to destroy them. And Mr. Smith, who responded, said it's not Billy the Smith, it's more like the Martin Luther King assassination, be a proper analogy, having the clothes around of Harvey Milk. So the coroner there is threatening, and he will, he said that he plans at some point to destroy the clothing. He's unimpressed that the clothing belongs to somebody else. So again, vital evidence, 3 times in political murders in the state of California, run by coroners and people that take over the job afterwards, like Feinstein. Conventions coming up in that city, it'd be a good thing if people up there had the energy to organize and bring this out. Now, there's another story in the Chronicle just today that was shocking. There's news from the last week that's piled up, but some of these stories are just so outrageous. Well, the officials debate the covert hit teams to kill terrorists. The Reagan administration is wondering whether the CIA or the Defense Department, the Army, should, on U.S. insulation, should be allowed to just kill on site terrorists. That they said there's so many terrorists around that the CIA, that Mr. Casey pretends that we don't have hit squads. He says it would be dangerous, like the revelations of trying to kill Cuban President Fidel Castro. But it's worse than that. The excuse is that there's Iranians and there's Syrians, and there's these PLO and the people from Libya, and there's all these hit teams. So should we have an Air Force or a 3-man hit team ourselves that just goes out, a commando strike team that kills the terrorists? Now, the implications are terrible, because we had 4 incidences, one after the other, that I thought were provocateur areas. And I mentioned the Korean airline that was a total lie and fraud the way it came down. the downing of Larry McDonald and the incident in Burma, the killing of the Korean visitors, heads of state, and the Kuwait bombing, the U.S. Kuwait bombing, and in Lebanon, synchronized with the Grenada invasion, the way that our embassy there was shot down. Now, just two of those things I'll update with you tonight. One is in the Washington Post this last week. The authors of the KAL article say the agents were warned of espionage law violations. In Denver, Colorado, two people, Tom Bernard and T. Edward Eskelson, E-S-K-E-L-S-O-N, many of you have heard their names, were on the air and wrote an article saying that the United States version of the tragedy of the Korean Airline was incomplete and misleading, and they urged for a full disclosure, as well as another member of the CIA, who urged for full disclosure before Reagan and his administration get gun crazy and try to get away with this. You see, we could have, again, if somebody really wanted to, use it as a provocation for a nuclear first against the Soviet Union because a civilian plane went down. And one of these days, that's what's going to happen. Well, the National Security Agency has threatened these men. They've gone to their attorney. They said that you use classified facts pertaining to national security, and they've scared them possible with arrest. Ronald Reagan wants a law to go through that if you write anything you knew regarding the intelligence community for the rest of your life, that you are subject to prosecution. So that these two men were trying to explain the nature of those RC-135 flights, and they had flown them themselves. And they were taken to task, they were threatened, they had to get a lawyer, and they may be charged of espionage law violations. So when a person is part of an administration, and they work, do their job, and they leave their job, and then they see something is wrong, they can go to jail for life if they speak up. If they see their own government is lying, like the Secret Service agent that was sent to Springfield, Missouri, Bolin, because he knew that there were lies about the protection of John Kennedy. If you see something that's wrong at any time in your lifetime when you're employed by people doing a lot of bad things, you're subject to being imprisoned yourself and heavy fines. Another story came out in the Washington Post. Burma accuses some of their own people of aiding in the North Korean bombing. When that bombing attack took place, some low-level Burmese officials were involved in other citizens of Burmese intelligence. And they quickly gave the death penalty to a couple of North Koreans that were sentenced to death on December the 9th. And then they find out that at the time of these killings, at a ceremony October the 9th, when 21 persons were killed, that there were people from the Burmese government that were involved, that they took bribes, that they allowed saboteurs to come ashore, that they had visited the port, that they were part of the entire sabotage, and they worked with the Burmese government. So what looks like a North Korean incident, which North Korea had no reason to do because Burma was one of the few countries that was trading and recognizing them, and then all of a sudden they called it off after the bombings, that there were people inside the Burmese government that were involved. And the first easiest thing is to do the death penalty on the so-called terrorists. Now, we could have a so-called terrorist invasion of some sort at the Olympic Games in Los Angeles or anywhere at the UN or in Washington. And it could be identical to Hitler's Reichstag, where Hitler sets off the destruction of his own building and then uses it to round up people for the rest of his life or his administration, whether he died or went on to somewhere else. The horrors that followed began with the Reichstag as an excuse to round up. So when we get these HID teams, we can get a provocateur to do the job. And again, under the use of mind control or zombies or kamikaze, then kill that person. And do the political act that follows, and the suggestion is, should our Pentagon have commando hit teams? There's also an article about the Kuwait, several articles about the Kuwait embassy, how they asked for help. They knew that it wasn't protected, and 4 months before the terrorist bombing, December the 12th, there was a detailed intelligence report on the dangers to the embassy, but they left it unguarded and let it be bombed so that they could make a list of the terrorist groups. Now, the Los Angeles Times has a story, this is a week ago, 100 terror groups listed as the Olympic Games approach. They have a potential threat of 50 major terrorist organizations and 50 smaller groups. Would you believe that out of those 100 groups, I'll bet you 78% are CIA. They even cite Carlos. Here is a history in the Washington Post and New York Times of Carlos the Terrorist, working with Frank Turple and Edwin Wilson, Samuel Cummings of the CIA, floating on Cummings' yacht in London and Cummings' headquarters in Monte Carlo, and they're saying that the international terrorist will be out with his gang. Can you imagine landing in Los Angeles, you know, and we're here for the Olympic Games. Now, this article goes on these smaller groups, and it says the dangerous thing is that these are hired guns, and they'll work for any extremist group. In other words, if there's 100 terrorist groups, that you can use a hired gun so there's endless people that would shoot. Why don't they want to solve the Olympic Games by going back to George Habash and the Munich Games in Germany, and they would come to the solution of where the terrorists come from? They come from the CIA and Nazi Germany, and they are a pattern after the Tsarist terrorist groups that went around in the villages and scared people and kept control through terror. They're looking for this gang of 100. It's just pathetic, and I'm sure their names are into the computer of Western Goals and the LAPD. And they're creating a script. I mean, if you want to talk about a fiction script, just like the SLA, if you want to know what kind of terrorists there are, I reprinted, and I still have some of the article I did, the whole one on the SLA is the CIA, written 10 years ago, and it goes into the Olympic Games and the way that our whole California Department and Ronald Reagan, the Justice Department, the CIA, and the Operation Chaos and COINTEL program, the MK Ultra, all worked together and created, which wasn't a terrorist group at all. It was four college graduates from Indiana and Bloomington, Indiana, who came out here and went into some prison movements and messed around with legitimate workers like the United Farm Workers and the United Prisoners Union, and they cornered the various radicals that existed and got them longer sentences, or people like the ones that were working with them from Berkeley, they were killed. A few people that were genuine in some kind of a movement got swept up with these other from the CIA, Ms. Moon and a few of them, that got like a vacuum. They got sucked in the excitement, and they were killed. There are some terrorists on the run. There are legitimate terrorists now. Incidentally, this is the first time in 3 weeks that real terrorists came out of the woodwork, and this is what they may be worrying about, not those phony terrorists with the name set up by the CIA, but in Madrid, four men gunned down a former general for General Francisco Franco. And in Paris, they gunned down the head of the Savak, the torture machine for the Shah. This is a new turning point. Maybe they'll make a movie called Turning Point. Some of the oppressors, I wondered how they lived so long. How did they ever live so long? Do you realize that the oppressors, two of them got knocked off in the last 3 weeks. And a lot of the arms and the weapons, similar to Hitler's, you know, SS and his commando teams, want to wipe out maybe people who are going after, maybe someday they'll find the Kissingers and the Kramers and the Hagues and the people of Brzezinski's and the real warriors, the people that order the bloodbaths of these countries. Maybe somebody will get smart and realize where the blood is flowing from, where the orders come from. But they realize late, it's a long time since Franco, but this general got his this last week. And it may be a lesson to a few of those others. There's hundreds of thousands of those people around. And it may be a lesson to the people that ran the Savak for the Shah when he was gunned down in Paris. I am sure from this point on that their names are now on lists. I am sure there has to be some point in history where people wake up, the victims, and say, I've had enough already. I don't know what it's going to take, but there's going to be some dues to be paid and some blood to flow on the other side. It's been too easy so far for the Richard Nixons and the Henry Kissingers to run this world, and Brzezinski's and the Fritz Kramers. It's been far too easy for Ronald Reagan to make this blood flow. And someday, I don't know who or when or how, but when it starts in Spain and when it starts in Paris, getting the head of the Shah's Savak in Paris, it can't be too long before this begins to become a pattern. And the vengeance then will happen. Now, the orderly process is like in Argentina to put the three former presidents on trial for murder. That's what we should do in the United States right now. Forget the impeachment of Richard Nixon, start with Dorothy Hunt's plane crash, but put them Gerald Ford and also George Bush for the murder of Orlando Letelier. He's directly responsible as CIA director. Knew it ahead, knew it afterwards. George Bush and Richard Nixon and Gerald Ford and Ronald Reagan, and charged them with cover-up of the past assassinations, the Warren Commission job, and lying about Oswald's diary, the planted evidence, and the media propaganda that Ford used. All of them have been responsible for a part of the murder of the president and a senator and civil rights leaders. They've worked with the assassins, and eventually somebody, believe it or not, their names will go down for what they are, and they'll get out of the pages of the beautiful people, and they'll be recognized for what they are. Now, Jack Anderson had a 5-part series. This week was the 5th part of his story that he's doing on fascism. In fact, I called the office in Washington, D.C., and spoke to the fellow who did this story, and I said, have you seen The Rebel? And he said he bought a couple issues, but he didn't know about the article I had written for Rebel, and I said I would send it to him, and a lot of other material. This is what he had this week. The Spirit of Nazism Lives. This is the 5th part on fascism, and the San Francisco Chronicle called it Anti-Semitic Death Squads. It talks about the jackboot, the swastikas that are appearing in South America and elsewhere, that Ronald Reagan is growing concerned. He's worked with these people. He's concerned. The World Anti-Communist League, that's what put Ronald Reagan in power. And he knew they had the swastikas, and he knew they have the jackboots, and he knew they were Klaus Barbie and Joseph Mengele's and Walter Rauf and the whole gang. He's Martin Bormann. They funded this administration. Licio Gelli went back and forth between Argentina and Italy, between Franco and Mussolini and Hitler, and then was it Reagan's inauguration. They have taken the money from these people, and they've run with them. Now they say they're getting more anti-Semitic. Honduras, Argentina, he mentions Paraguay, Chile, and the men run out of Guadalajara, Mexico. Remember in The Rebel, I wrote about Oaxaca, Mexico, and Albert Osborne and Permadex. And it tells about the wealthy Arabs giving the money in Mexico to the World Anti-Communist League. Yeah, Otto von Bolschwing was active with the Grand Mufti over there in Palestine before it became Israel. And Hitler had a good, strong organization with the Jamal family over there, and also in various countries, Libya, and there's no difference. The CIA has worked in all the Saudi Arabian countries. They trained Nasser, Galen trained Nasser, he trained Sadat, he trained Gaddafi. It isn't just, it mentions the PLO, it isn't just South America. Wait till they take their coats off, and then you'll know where the real Henry Kissinger is. He put those people in, and Fritz Kramer and John McCloy put them in. And this article tells about ever since World War II, these Nazis have won a lot of attention. Mengele's was honored in Paraguay, Adolf Eichmann, refuge in Argentina, Klaus Barbie, an advisor to the Bolivian government. The Hitler 1,000-year Reich is well and alive. And this is part 5, carried and syndicated in 300 papers. It is alive because they took hundreds of millions of dollars that I mentioned last week, and they took people from the United States Army that was in the OSS, then the CIC, the investigation group, and they also took Henry Kissinger's, his mentor at Harvard was a Dr. William Yandel Elliott, who was in the OSS, who worked overseas with these societies out of Sicily and Berlin and ran the Harvard Department of History. Well, the chickens not only have come home to roost, but they've laid some pretty strong eggs. And an example of that, again, just in closing, is how fast Larry Flint and his wife went under with these ridiculously long sentences. People are out of jail for mass murders and walk in the streets for all kinds of things. These people have been treated with the MK Ultra, and Rebel is closed. Rebel had good articles, even a 2-part on Colonial Dignitat and the Nazis. But the Jack Anderson column is carrying, I guess, where Rebel leaves off, and they'll be doing more, and other magazines will be doing more, and of course, I'll be doing more, but I won't do it anymore on this evening because it's over, and now I must stop. It's Mae Russell. It's exactly 9, so it's KAZU-FM in Pacific Grove, California.